Good afternoon. Thanks for being here. We are really happy to be starting this conference, the first one we do, that we hope to be the first of many. We hope to be the first one that I'm here in the bottom. We hope to be the first of many conferences and meetings we do with all the owners from all over the world. We picked San Francisco for the first one. I think it's a great location, considering that many of you live in the area, all the great wines that are made around. But in the future, we will pick different locations, so it's going to be a very interesting meeting every time. Before we start, we wanted to introduce you to our team that we are so happy are here with us. I am the photographer. Most of you know many of them. We have Soledad, who is in the customer service team of the company, Soledad Ollero, along with Casey, Mariano Onofri, wine director, wine expert, and
wine drinker.
And a key person in the process of creating the wines of the owners and the wines of Mendoza in general. Libby, Casey's sister, who was working in Mendoza for a few months. She just came back and is helping us in the organization of this event. It's been great. Thank you, Libby. We have Santiago Achava there.
What does he do again?
He drinks wine.
Wine drinker also. Nathan, CFO. Daffy Crane. Hola, Daffy.
Hello.
We just got here. Mm-hmm. And Brian Driscoll.
And Jackie.
Exactly. And Jackie here also. From the legal team. No one else, right? So anything you need in the next days, we are all pleased to help you and try to make this meeting really useful, profitable, and important for the future of the company.
Well, thank you all for coming. I mean, so we have some of our very first owners and some of our newer owners, and we wouldn't be here without all of you all and all your support, so we really appreciate it. This first session, we're going to take about an hour and just kind of give you an overview of kind of where we've come from and where we think we're going, address some of the big picture challenges and opportunities that we think we have, and then we'll dig in over the next couple days on marketing, on some legal issues, on some accounting issues, and some strategic issues. Basically, the goal is twofold: to get information from you all so that we can do a better job of continuing to make great wines and provide outstanding customer service to you all, to get feedback to that end, and then continue on our quest to continue to make absolutely amazing wines. So we really appreciate the time. Hopefully also during this couple days, we'll give you some tools to be able to make better wines, to handle the logistics and some of the headaches a little better. And perhaps for some of you that are interested, start to sell some of your wines as well. So those are really the overview. So we put together a little presentation largely for people that are not here so we can send out have some context. But we'll kind of rip through it. And I'm not a huge fan of presentations, but so feel free to jump in with questions as we go. We'll go through it fairly quickly. Feel free to jump in and make it a bit more interactive and a lot more interesting than just Pablo and I sitting here talking through 28 slides. But we are going to start with these are the goals basically that we've talked about. But we're going to start with a little video that we've put together. That for those of you that have been down recently, I think you've seen it. Some of you haven't been down in a long time. I'm not naming any names, Sherman, but
thank you.
Some of you have been down more frequently than others, and if you haven't been down in a while, this will give you a little sense of what we've got going on down there.
The feeling here is not only something in the heart, but that's something that changes in the feelings in your soul.
You smell it, you see it, you taste it, you're surrounded by it.
I describe it as heaven on earth.
Paradise is waking up here in the vineyards and looking out your window and watching the sunlight rise up in the valley and hit the peaks of the Andes and turn it pink and then watch the light run down the peaks and into the valley as the morning goes on. That's bliss.
What I get excited about is the ability to get in the vineyard and work the vineyard, harvest the grapes, be in the winery when the wines are being made, being a part of the process with the team and actually seeing something go from grape to bottle. That's pretty rare.
Each little bundle that you've picked is coming past you on a sorting conveyor belt. You pull out the leaves, you pull out the stems. You're getting very, very connected to your wine at this point. You're inseparable from your wine.
This is the kind of experience that words and pictures can only begin to scratch the surface. Every time I come here and I spend time here, I experience something different. I meet new people. And each experience is an improvement over the last, merely because there's always a component of adventure here.
Quando eu trouxe os meus filhos aqui no Vale do Uco pela primeira vez, a minha filha me disse: meu pai, você disse que comprou um lote aqui em Mendoza, mas na verdade você comprou um pedacinho do céu. Isso faz uma grande diferença.
It is a joy to sit down and have a glass of your own production.
To share that with your friends, and then for them to share it with their friends, there's really nothing like it. It's magical. It's spectacular. It's a great story.
It's just a sweet experience. It makes it all worthwhile.
I think you tend to walk a little higher, stride a little further, feeling the soil with your bare feet, drinking the wines, talking to the people. It's very hard to explain. The only way to really understand it is to experience it. I don't know. I'm just in love with the place.
Well, we really like this video we finished a few months ago, because when we started the company, the dream, 8 years ago, we had a business plan, we had an idea, and then we executed it as good as we could. But the most important part was to have these people, the owners, telling what they feel, and if we can tell that this is real and that we're moving in the right direction, is because the owners feel this way. It's great to see how they can express and how they feel about the project. So,
Jordan,
I was asked to participate in this. This was all unscripted. They just sat down and asked you questions, and the people that you heard responding just spoke from their heart about what they were doing. There was no preparation for any of that, and I think at least for me, it speaks to the honesty of the experience.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So, our goal today, from the beginning, always, our number one goal is to make the best possible quality wines. We think we are already making damn good wines, thanks to especially the work of Santiago and Mariana and Pablo and Francisco and the rest of the team. But that's the driver in everything we do. That's why we started the company. That's what gets us up every day. You know, I think that we're headed in the right direction. Probably very few people have made wines of the quality that we have with you all in 8 years anywhere in the world. And we think we're on a track. And we talk a lot about, with Santiago, the road to 95 points, the road to 98 points. And as we do our planning long term, and it's going to take some time to get there. Whether it's another 2 years, 5 years, 7 years, we don't know. But we're going to continue to wake up every day to try and make the best possible wines in Argentina, and we're pretty confident we're going to get there. In addition, we've got some secondary goals, and they involve a lot of you all, primarily focused around our experiences, I think we also have a big opportunity and challenge to eliminate some of the headaches of owning a vineyard. The easier it is for you to have the enjoyable parts and less of the painful parts, the better off it is for all of you and all of our future owners. Learning, we've come to realize, is a really important part of the process for many of you. How to make the wines, how to distribute the wines, learning about the wine and the winemaking process is really critical for a lot of you in terms of your ownership experience. We need to work on costs, especially being in Argentina with in the inflationary environment we're in. We'll talk a bit about that over the next couple of days. Some of you are going to want to sell wines commercially. Not really as a business, or only a couple of you, I think, are thinking about it as a real business, but as a way to offset some of your expenses, to have a little fun. So we're going to dig into that a lot over the next couple of days. And also, we're a private company, and we've got 90 investors, and part of our goals is to create an attractive return for our investors. I think you all know a bit about kind of how we are and who we are. We think of ourselves, we spent a lot of time doing some strategic planning over the last year, and we've come up with this vine or this tree as kind of an example of how we think of ourselves. And at the root of our business are our private vineyard estates. And you may not be able to see it in the back, but then you've got a number of branches that go off. And we've got hospitality, where we've got the resort, our tasting rooms, the restaurant, activities, whether that's horseback riding or planting or rafting, farming and production, all of the work around creating our wines, owner commercialization, then getting back to either selling grapes or selling wines, and of course tasting and purchase. So that's kind of how we look at the constellation of how we run our business. Today we have 150 amazing people. We'll have 200 by the end of the year when we open the resort. We have 127 private vineyard owners like yourselves. Last year we did 360 fermentations, probably more than just about any winery in the world, certainly in terms of small productions. We have a total of 1,500 acres under our management, about 670 acres planted. And we'll open up the resort at the end of the year, as I said. As we look towards the future, I think that we've been growing like crazy, as all of you well know. And some of the challenges we've taken on, including the resort, have been, quite honestly, overwhelming and massive. And we've done a lot of, quote, crazy things over the years, but the resort has really turned out to be something that's been overwhelming, and we focused a lot of time on that. We're very excited about opening the resort at the end of the year. We're also excited to have it done and be opening, being able to get back and focus on some other things. And one of the main things we'll focus on is the whole process of our owners, the processes, the systems, the efficiency in the operation. We always have new ideas. Every day we have another 10 ideas, and we're not that interested in doing a whole lot more. I think we want to do better and improve our systems rather than trying to keep growing at this point. We've got other ideas. I'm sure we'll come up with 100 more in the next few months, and we'll take advantage of some of them, but we're not really looking to grow for the next couple of years. We want to kind of take it easy. Maybe after almost 9 years we're getting a little tired, or just really want to focus on some other things. We're getting old. That's definitely part of it. Our goal is to have the greatest hotel in South America. We'll be opening up the Winemakers Village next year, and we'll continue to grow our private vineyards. We expect to get to about 200 private vineyard owners over the next few years, and we've toyed around a little bit with some tiny projects in Europe. Corporate structure, we have 90 individual investors, as I mentioned. Many of you are investors in the company. We've raised about $10 million to invest and grow in the company. And we've got a board of directors, of which there are three management representatives, myself, Pablo, and Nathan, and four investor representatives, three of which are private vineyard owners, including Jordan, who's here and sat on our board for, 6 years now, I think. Private vineyards, why we're all here. That's the map. A lot of vineyards. You were number 8, Sherman, something like that. So very, very early on. It's pretty cool to look at that and to think about the owners that we have.
We started with... I'm lost now. We started with this area. It was 100 acres. That was the original plan.
That's all we thought we needed.
Yeah. So then we initially, we grow to the west, And today the whole area has 1,500 acres. 670 are planted. But potentially we could do in the next years the development of all this area. With now different things, not just vineyards, the winery and all the winery compound with the service areas. We will store wine, have the bottling area there too. We have enough space for that. The resort area, that is a 20-acre plot. We added this area to the resort. The spa and the gym are now going to be, especially the gym, in the middle of a vineyard. That was not part of the original lot of the resort. And this is the winemaker's village. We've been working on this for 3 years now. And right now we have almost all the lots sold with one winery in production and three more under construction. And in the last 2 years, we also had a grow to the east because of more logistics reasons, because those areas have existing wells and power lines, so it made easier the development. Because to the west, we had to start from scratch, clearing and installing all the infrastructure.
When we like the terroir, I mean, that's some of the earliest vineyards. Our earliest vineyards were planted in here. We're really pleased with them, so we added some more to the east. About our owners, we have 127 owners from 13 countries, about 70% from North America, 17% from Brazil, 8% from Europe, and then some other randoms. We add about 20 per year, so we plant about 100 acres each year for new owners. The average size of vineyard still remains about 5 acres. Our smallest is 1 acre, and our largest is 19. Of our owners, there's a happy owner, Lou. Of our owners, 78% approximately really just do it for personal use. They are happy with a barrel a year, maybe two barrels a year, aren't interested in any of the headaches or opportunities of selling it. Another 21%, which are many of you here, are primarily, I think, driven by personal enjoyment, but like the idea of doing a little bit of commercialization. Part of it just to have it to offset some of the expenses, to have your wine in your local wine shop and some of the restaurants you go to try and get to at least kind of a break-even way. And then we've got about 6% that are really doing this as a commercial venture. We've got Ravana, Rana Vineyards are doing it. We've got Rob Lawson from Pavi, one of our owners from Canada, is making almost 100,000 bottles of wine. So there are a few people that are doing it as a real business as well. Of the 680 vineyards we have 18 different varietals. We're adding three new this year, Carmenere, Sangiovese, and Teroldigo. Santiago, why are we planting these new crazy varietals?
Because we can. Because we're curious.
We are absolutely curious. And that's a theme that if you spend any time with Santiago and Mariana and Pablo, and this gets back to our goal of making the best wines. We think we're going to be able to make the best wines because of that experimentation. We have more varietals than anybody. We do more fermentations. We have more data points. So we're able to learn faster about what makes good wine from Uco Valley than anybody else, which is why we're confident we're going to keep making better and better wines. We have about 190 acres of current acreage available for sale. Varietals planted, as you'd expect, about 55% Malbec. That's down. We started out closer to 70%. Cabernet Franc has been coming on strong. I think all of you know we absolutely love the Cabernet Franc from there. It was a little bit of a, not a surprise that it was good, but it's outstanding. I mean, it's up there with Malbec. Mariana or Santi, you want to talk a little bit about our Cab Franc?
Bueno, creo que ayer algunos de ustedes pudieron estar en el.
Now only two people can understand you. Where are the subtitles?
But I would have many questions. So, I was saying that yesterday we had a reception and I had the opportunity to choose one of your wines. Actually, I chose.
He's over here.
Jeff, he's here.
Yes, over here.
So I chose your wine that is a pure Cabernet Franc and was part of the reception. And the reason why I decided to have a pure Cabernet Franc as part of that cocktail is because we are really happy with the results we are obtaining with this grape. We knew that Malbec would be outstanding, and it's outstanding. But if you have a ranking, like Cabernet Franc is there. You know, this morning we were also discussing about, you know, grapes, and I think it was with you, Ted, that you said why you are not mentioning Cabernet Franc, because it's Cabernet Franc for me and Malbec are every year great grapes. The expression we are obtaining is fantastic. And then the others, they don't mean that they are not good, but they require more time, more matureness in the vineyards and more work, and little by little we are obtaining different, really nice results as well. But there is no doubt that Cabernet Franc gave us a very nice surprise. We have many neighbors, actually, Los de los Siete, many vineyards that are surrounding us looking for our Cabernet Franc that give us a really very high pride, because really the results are great. We carried out a competition last year called Desafío Cabernet Franc, that is Cabernet Franc Challenge. And we had 18 wineries participating from Argentina, the best Cabernet Francs from Argentina, and we didn't have a bottled Cabernet Franc. We still had our Cabernet Franc in the barrel, but we put our Cabernet Franc to compete. We were 20 people, all of us, we are all wine people, winemakers, important winemakers, and from the ranking, our Cabernet Franc was chosen as the number 3 best Cabernet Franc of the 20. So, and it was not bottled yet. That is very important. So, we were very, very happy with the results. So, I mean, we hope with the rest of the grapes we continue having great quality as well.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of a standout. I think also we're excited about Santiago and Lorena, the Syrah. And we've for the future as it's getting mature, and we've had some really nice results with the Merlot. Farming strategy. This gets into the intersection between quality and quantity, and there is a pretty direct relationship there. You can farm for low yields and high quality, or you can farm for higher yields and lower quality and greater revenue. Something we'll dig into throughout the next couple days, but that's as you start thinking about your farming plans, that's going to be a really critical piece of the puzzle. Malbec is worth about anywhere between 20 and 50% more than any other varietal on the open market per kilo. So if you're thinking about it from your carrying cost perspective, if you have Torontés or Chardonnay or something like that planted, it's going to be a lot more expensive for you to have those grapes because you can't sell them for a very high price relative to Malbec. As a result, some of our owners have gone to the extreme of even regrafting and taking off the top part of the plant and regrafting it with Malbec because it's a long-term, more economically viable opportunity. And we've been very pleased with the results. You lose 1 year of your farming, but the quality there is perfect, and you retain the root structure of the original plant. One of the things, our long-term strategy is the way that we farm is more intense and produces better grapes than the average market. So the commodity for grapes doesn't pay really what our grapes are worth. That's starting to change over time, and Santiago, Mariana, Francisco are working with the other wineries when we sell to Catena, Zuccardi, and others, because they're starting to recognize that the vine's grapes are a higher quality and deserve a higher price. We're not quite there yet, but we think over time that our grapes will continue to get a premium.
Michael?
Yeah?
When you regraft on, let's say, a 10-year-old rootstock, does the next year produce, and the following year, as if you have a 10-year-old vine, or does it start back to the first year?
Santi?
10-year-old. In the age of the grape, or the age and quality relationship is dependent on the size of the root structure, mainly. Not entirely, but the size of the root structure. It also depends on the thickness of the trunk, but that is less than the size of the root structure. And that's why we need better to keep your roots.
Barry?
Do you see Catena or people like that buying grapes from these vineyards and then designating it that vineyard?
At some point in the future, perhaps. That's risky for them because they don't control it. If they do a vineyard designate, they'd want to do some kind of long-term contract. But I think that's the kind of stuff that will happen, especially because we've got some other interesting vines. And for them, then they can. I mean, it's very common to have a contract. I mean, Santi, you don't own your Altamira, right? It's a long-term. You have a long-term contract with it.
We do own Altamira, but we don't own Minador.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's a common model that something we look at.
Do you see that as an advantage or disadvantage both to us and to Ricardo?
I think that there will be, we'll probably want a combination. I think for the right contract, the thing with the grapes is it's very cyclical. And so if you're to look at your grape revenue over 10 years, you're probably going to do pretty well. But on any given year like this year, we're getting killed because inflation's so high at the time when grape prices are low. So you either have to sell them every year on the spot market or have a really long-term contract so that you can even out the highs and lows. And as we get more and more grapes, and then part of it's a profile for the owners. So if you're somebody, if you're an owner that's risk averse on your carrying costs, and you're willing to give away a little upside, but you don't want to have to write a $15,000 check every year, then a long-term contract might make a lot of sense for you.
It is a process, and we are still planting vineyards. So, but when all the vineyards are in production and we know that the quality is consistent, we'll be able to go and close some deals. But I think it's the next step that is very, very, will happen very soon. Well, then the winery, we did 360 fermentations in the last harvest. That was a huge logistics, and Pablo Martorell, the full-time in-house winemaker who many of you know, Santiago, Mariana, and the team in the winery did great work controlling the quality from the vineyard to the barrel. We also incorporated new software systems, and also in the lab, we bought specific machinery that helped us a lot to control. And it's almost surprising that we, because this has been the biggest challenge for us, learning how to do it, and I think in 10 years we'll say, okay, it's obvious, we do 500 wines every year and we know how to do it. But learning and not making any big mistakes on the way has been really important, and thanks to the team who has taken the very seriously the work. We have in our winery 290,000 liters capacity that is reusing some tanks, is enough for 500,000 bottles of wine. And also, the vines rented the Jimenez Reilly Winery, good part of it, to make the Recuerdo wines. So for the vines of Mendoza, we don't use the winery we have in the project. So we are using almost only for the owners the winery in the vines land. We added the new building for barrel storage, so we have now two barrel rooms. It's good for the malolactic fermentation, so we can control temperatures for the barrel fermentations too. We have more capacity. And the new lab that we started to use in 2013 is great. And we bought the new bottling machine that is going to be in the property in the next weeks. That will give us a much greater control of the timing of the bottling for many reasons. It's better to decide when to bottle every barrel according to each individual wine, even to be able to share the process with you when you go there, instead of just doing a massive bottling for 3 weeks of all the wines together, renting the wine. So it's a big investment, but it's going to pay.
It also does labeling and capsules and screw caps and it's got all the bells and whistles.
Great quality. And we're working on next year on the construction of the second fermentation building that will take the capacity to double, basically.
Are we still thinking about building caves?
Yes, the second building has the cave, the cellar for 4,000 barrels.
Better temperature crawl. Yeah. Just, you all might be interested what your winemaking plan stacks up against the other owners. About 50% of our owners make less one barrel or less. Almost 30% make 1,000 to 5,000 bottles. 4% make 5 to 10,000 bottles, and 2% make more than 10,000 bottles. So we've got a fairly wide distribution of those. In terms of what they produce, this is in terms of volume. So premium is about 47%. Premium would be a wine that would retail for about $20. that number is a little bit inflated. We've got two or three owners that are making anywhere between 10 and 50,000 bottles. So that's why that number is so significant. 42% super premium, 6% premium plus, something in between premium and super premium, something that might retail for $30 in that range.
That is a new category too.
Yeah.
We didn't have before.
And then barrel fermentation is 5%. And we definitely, if you're interested in creating something really high end and really unique, definitely talk to Mariana and Santiago about barrel fermentation. We've done this now for this is our third year.
Yes,
and we're really, really pleased with the results. It's insanely expensive, but it's really, really good and interesting.
Yeah, we started like a game experiment, but it worked really great, and we did 76 barrels this year. I don't think how many wineries do. Claude Los Siete, Michel Ronin has a few every year, but we did a really big production in relation to the total, right?
As you'd expect, everyone makes Malbec or is the base.
Could you just go back one more slide, Michael, just for 2 seconds? Not this.
Oops.
No.
The other back.
One back.
One more.
Just give me your one second.
We'll also send you all of these presentations, and we're recording the sessions, so everybody's got it.
That's good. Thanks.
Almost 70% Malbec. This is pre-blending, so these are the fermentations. Of course, at the end, based on the final blending, these change a little bit. But you know, the vast majority is Malbec, and then a little bit of everything else. In terms of strategy, and one of the reasons we really want to try and help you all over the next few days and over the next few years is thinking about your winemaking strategy. Overall, I think we're blown away with the quality, where it's exceeded our initial expectations and gets better every year. We have the blending pool, I think, as all of you know, but that gives you the opportunity to make a Malbec and then blend it and tweak it and improve it, perhaps, with other varietals. And that will be available every year for flexibility. You may love Chardonnay, but don't have any Chardonnay or don't want to plant Chardonnay. You can always buy grapes from one of your neighbors and make a Chardonnay or some other, or a Pinot Noir or something else that you may not have the grapes of. As I mentioned, barrel fermentations we're really pleased with. One thing we're digging into and looking fairly significantly at are shared fermentations. So for people that want to produce less expensive wines, and you don't care if every grape in there came from your vineyard, it's a great opportunity to significantly decrease costs. Most of the costs in winemaking after you get past the barrel are in labor, and when we do a 1,000 liter fermentation, it's basically the same amount of work as doing a 20,000 liter fermentation. So it's much, much cheaper to be able to do shared fermentation. So as you're thinking about commercialization, if you're trying to get your costs down, if it doesn't have to be an estate wine, if it doesn't have to come from your grapes, that can be a really good opportunity. We're also playing around with doing some sparkling and late harvest, some kind of niche wines that people probably don't want a barrel or two or three barrels, but to have a few cases might be interesting for owners.
At one point we talked about the sparkling, and it seemed like the quality was a challenge, so we sort of scrapped that project a little bit near term. So how are we seeing the quality evolve in the sparkling?
Well, the quality issue was where we were going to... You can't make sparkling in the winery. It's a, what is it?
It's a special, authorization...
It has to be a separate building, and we didn't have space to do it ourselves, so we were going to do it at the university, and we weren't able to control the quality there. So over time, sooner or later, we'll create our own space in our building, and Santiago's winery in the winemaker village is going to focus largely on sparkling, right? I mean, you're a big believer in the opportunity, right?
This fall winery will concentrate on Burgundian varieties, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and sparkling. And the sparkling sector will be mostly for third-party wineries that form the service provider as a way to pay the cost of the wine. But yes, it requires a specific machinery, specific areas of the building, specific design of those areas and tanks, and therefore, as always, it's 1,000 details, and in third-party Champenois producers in Mendoza right now do not provide control over that. So we need to do it ourselves means within this big family.
What's your initial thought on what you use as a base?
very traditional, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and then start exploring wild stuff like other white varieties, other red varieties, vinified as white, but started with a big core of the traditional, known as fantastic Chardonnay varieties.
Great. The Vines Road and Spa, I think you all have seen lots of pictures. I mentioned it's been overwhelming. Brian?
You have about 15-20 minutes.
I know.
Okay.
But thank you. We'll have 22 one- and two-bedroom villas, 70,000 square feet of construction. We will have invested about $15 million in the operation. We've got an amazing gym that literally flies over the vineyards, running and biking trails through the vineyards of 2.5, 5, and 10K. Francis Mauman's partnership with us, Siete Fuegos, will open on my birthday on October 14th. Rack rates will be between $400 and $1,700, depending on season and villa size. We've sold 8 villas to vineyard owners. And during 2014, all of our private vineyard owners will get 50% off to stay at the vineyard. There'll be a significant discount each year. We hope that it'll be at least 50%, but for the first year, we've done the numbers, and that's a good place to stay. We know that you all will tend to stay longer, and we want to give you every opportunity to stay at the resort. Winemakers Village, you want to talk about that?
Winemakers Village, this is the area I was showing you in the map. That is in the front that we have to the main road. That is called the Camino del Vino Road, the road of the wine. And it connects probably 25 wineries in the area, in Uco Valley, right? So there was a big opportunity of creating something that was more open to the public, and especially for wine tours. So we designed these 12 lots from 5 to 12 acres, where instead of selling private vineyards, we sell the land with the obligation of the buyer to build a winery in a certain time. And that winery that has a maximum limit in size, capacity, so we don't want industrial producers there. And that winery has to be open for tourism and be part of like a neighbors association where we share some services.
So it's one-stop shopping. You get there, and there'll be 12 wineries, and it's the personal project. So we've got the winemaker from Catena Zapata, who makes 30 million bottles, but here he'll make 100,000 bottles on his personal project. Marcel Pelleriti from Costa Siete, Santiago. So it's going to be really pretty cool, I think. Yeah. You guys want to talk about what you guys are doing there, or is that still hush-hush?
In what way?
Just the winery and what you guys what vision is for down there.
Sure. So we have
putting John on the spot.
Yeah, that's all right. So we have a winery we're currently building right now. It's called Corazón del Sol. We have a property in Napa and one in Oregon as well. And we're going to have 16 planted acres there. The 4 acres will be winery and parking and so forth. But the project itself, the winery is going to be versatile, unique and special in the way that we really try to focus on small lot ferments and focus on the highest quality we can. So the winery will be something that's simple, that's not too big, but very, has the capacity to grow to a certain extent. We will have a tasting room in there as well. We're under construction right now. It should be finished hopefully by harvest. Knock on wood. But the project itself, it's been really, really exciting for us. To have a winery and a vineyard in Argentina after having such a successful winery in Napa and one in Oregon has... Should I stand up?
Sure, whatever. I mean, not too much, but...
Yeah. So it's been really exciting because we really focus on these... clonal selections for the soil, rootstock selections, and really try to identify what the vineyard's telling us and make site-specific wines. Wines that are honest and transparent to the vineyard is what we really try to focus on. So when looking at what we were going to do for varietals there, we wanted to obviously do a Malbec. Everyone wants to do that, and I think that's a really good addition to our portfolio, but we wanted to add some special things as well.
So we added the Bordeaux blend, predominantly left bank, but Malbec driven. And we're doing a GSM, a Grenache Sirah Mourvèdre, that's turned out spectacular. It's doing really well. But overall, you know, we've already designed our website. I don't know if you guys know that. So the website's up and running, and the first container should land, I think, next week.
Yep.
In the Port of Oakland. And it's pretty much all pre-sold already. So anyways, I'll be around this whole weekend if you guys ever want to talk about...
And we're going to... On Saturday, we're going to the winery in Napa. Hmm.
Yeah, so we have a property called Ravana in Napa, and we have one called Alexana Winery in Oregon. So I think all of you are joining us at 2 o'clock on Saturday at our property in Napa, where I'll be hosting you.
Great. Thanks,
you.
John.
Yeah, no problem.
So the great news for the whole project is that we have in the winemakers' village, apart from the foreigners, five of the probably top 10 winemakers in Argentina. Like Santiago, Alejandro Vigil, Marcelo Pereriti, and the Michelini brothers. So that was the best. What happened in the last 8 months is that this group of super talented winemakers wanted to be part of the project.
And this gets back to, Barry, your question earlier about creating a brand around the grapes. The more better wines that are created from the property, the easier it's going to be to get a premium for our grapes and for your wines. Some owner benefits. We talked about the resort rates. You also get 25% off in the restaurant and the spa, 50% off tasting and flights, and you can't quite see it there, but a third off all of the wines in our online store. Some of the key challenges that we face that I think most of you know, but we'll talk a little bit about and dig in further over the next couple days. Obviously, politics and our president, Christina. Fortunately, it appears that her days are numbered. She doesn't have the support she once had. There were some primary elections about 5 weeks ago where her party did very poorly. There's midterms elections in a couple weeks where they're expected to get killed. She'll still be elected for and in office for another 2 years, but they appear to be chastened and don't have the kind of political will to do some of the especially stupid things that they've done, in my opinion, over the last couple years. So we're hopeful about the political situation, and that's of course very tied to the Argentine economy. We've been suffering really terrible inflation over the last few years. Finally, the peso is devaluing at a rate greater than in inflation for the first time in a number of years, which is starting to make things cheaper. You may have also heard about the blue dollar or the parallel market in pesos that people are getting over 9 to 1, as opposed to the 560 on the official market. Also tied into politics, there are significant import restrictions that have been placed on how it affects us. Not so much on barrels, but paper for labels. It was really tough to get some interesting paper there. It's been very difficult for us to import things for the resort. Yeah, a lot of people are shaking their head about the paper labels. I mean, there's like four choices about what labels to choose, and it's been really a real challenge. Capsules. Utilities is a big challenge. We're in the desert, as you all know. Getting access to water, the permissions to drill wells, and electricity has been a bit of a challenge, and could be something on the horizon that we need to be very, very careful about and very watchful about. Once you kind of get out of Argentina, we've got bizarre liquor distribution laws and three-tiered systems. The system that makes it almost impossible to get wine to some places and very difficult to sell. Many of you are also shaking your head with the frustrations that are around that. I think that Duffy and her team have been working a lot on this, and I think they've got some ideas of how we can start moving in the right direction. We've got a beverage lawyer who's coming in tomorrow to do a session to kind of dig into some of those things and see if we can erase some of those headaches.
We're in 37 states. We're also in China, India, Japan, Singapore, Indonesia, Grand Cayman, Hawaii, Virgin Islands. So if any of you guys have any questions on that, don't hesitate.
I'm sure we do. And then, of course, Security Zone Commission. It's for those of you, some of you waiting years to get the final approval and the title. We've made some progress there recently. Duffy will talk about that tomorrow. We feel we're finally starting to get a good pace of approvals, but it's certainly something that's on our radar. Big challenge, as all of you well know, is inflation and costs. Farming is a very cyclical business, especially in Argentina. We've been dealing with inflation in real terms of upwards of 15% since 2009. Because of the costs have grown so high, many wineries are decreasing for the first time in many, many years, decreasing their production. Catena, Zuccardi, some of these large folks made 30 or 40% less wine than they had in previous 10 years. Unheard of, because their margins have been so decreased to such a great extent, it just doesn't make sense. Didn't make sense for them to make as much wine. We think that that's starting to change. People are starting to. It looks like they're planting this year, and they're already talking about buying grapes. So it thinks that they've taken that kind of air out of that market, and things they're feeling better about things. But that was part of the problem. For those of you that got your bills this last year, we had huge inflation driving up costs. At the same time, the value of grapes went down because so much of the demand was taken out of the market. We've raised farming by about 7% average over the last few years, and winemaking by 6%, which is good relative to real inflation of 15%. But compound that over a couple years, and it starts to get very expensive very quickly. Nathan has a session tomorrow on getting into the economics of our costs and the Argentine economy and government to give some insight into how we got here and how we're going to try and get out of this. As I mentioned, the devaluation of the peso is accelerating, and we believe it's inevitable. And this devaluation creates opportunities. Things are going to start to get cheaper. There's going to be an opportunity. Whether that opportunity starts in 6 months or 18 months, we don't know. But there's going to be an opportunity when you can make wine or build a house or do anything for a lot less money. And the people that have been in this business, Pablo's family, Santiago, they know that it's feast and famine. You've got to take advantage of those times. So over the next couple of years, as you think about your winemaking plans, if part of your strategy is to make money, you're going to need to make it in the high times and protect yourself in the low times. So that's one of the things we'll be talking a lot about over the next couple of years with you all.
Michael, can you go back to, there was one that lay...
Oh, at the bottom. The Ley de Tierras is was a law that the Argentine government passed about a year ago that limited the amount of land that could in Argentina that could be held by foreigners, and it has not still not been completely defined as what the standards are or how it's defined. And so it's while we're going through some, we have to file. Duffy, you want to if I'm saying something incorrect, tell me. We have to file paperwork as we go for all of you that are not Argentine to go through the process. We don't think it's an issue today. It might become an issue in the future.
And that is an issue more for large purchases. If someone wants to go and buy 1,000 acres, so the government wants to limit the maximum amount of land that is owned by
probably are the people that own 10,000 acres in Patagonia, things like that.
So in theory, it's not a problem for the small lots we sell, but we need to file another thing and another paper and demonstrate that as far as we are under the line of the maximum allowed, it's fine. If one of you wants to buy 3,000 acres in Ucobale, we
can talk.
Maybe you have a problem.
One of the big takeaways from this session is to look at expanded client services. We want to hear from you this week. We want to hear from you always. How can we do a better job of taking away the headaches? Wine making and the distribution and the storage and all of those things. There are a lot of you. We have 127 owners. If we can figure out things like document repositories, so you don't have to dig through your emails to find an invoice or a winemaking plan, regional meetings, more educational materials, maybe a Wikipedia type thing with some of this information. So those types of ideas we're really interested in hearing over the next few days. And we'll do our best to implement as many of them as possible. We know that the easier we make, the more headaches we take away, the better it's going to be for you all.
Just a quick comment on that. In your wine cuisine, we have a questionnaire on the customer portal idea that we're trying to build. So if you could fill that out and give it back to me sometime over the next couple of days, just to kind of give us some feedback on number one there.
We have a number of sessions on it, but we're very cognizant that many of you want to commercialize, at least to a limited extent, your wine. So we'll have sessions over the next couple of days, including one in about 20 minutes about the general wine market and how we can help you sell your wines. other sessions this week, we'll talk about some advice on tax and estate planning. Again, there's no point in all of you talking to your lawyers about how the vineyard should be treated from a tax perspective. We can serve as a facilitator to get that information and share that information with you all. Legal issues and the possibility of paying bills in pesos to take advantage of that parallel dollar. Questions? Other questions? Okay, then.
Michael, quick. Has anyone sold any vineyards yet?
We've resold or purchased from the owners a total of 4 vineyards. And we have found that there's a good market for people that are looking. People place a premium on having a planted vineyard, or some people do. Some people like going through the whole process. There's a premium. With that said, there isn't that much of a volume. I mean, we sell somewhere between 12 and 20 vineyards per year. So it is a challenge to find new buyers for existing vineyards.
What about the currency situation? If it's an American, can they get U.S. dollars, or is it locked in?
That hasn't been any. The transactions we've done have all been in the States, so the money doesn't go in Argentina and out of, or all, most of the money doesn't go in and out of Argentina. So no one's had a problem getting them.
Yeah, the fact that we have the structure, the legal structure, United States, Argentina, is very helpful because we do a lot of operations that never go to Argentina. So we have much less of the headaches of the dual currency or the low price of the official rate because we just finished the transaction in the States. We just do in Argentina the transfer title, but no money transaction is done in Argentina.
All righty. Next owner conference next year. Brazil.
All right. What day?
Which beach? Alan's going to host us all.
We have a Brazilian owner here. What do you think, Alan? Is it a good place for the next conference?
It is a great place. Go to São Paulo, Rio is fine.
Still in the World Cup.
Yes.
So, again, thank you all very much for coming. We're going to have show one more video, and then we'll have about a 15-minute break and come back for a second session. But really appreciate you all being here. Please give us all the feedback and ideas that you can over the next few days and months, and we'll continue to do our best to make some amazing wines for you. Let's see.
Send us the video too.
Yeah.
You couldn't believe how different it was 6 years ago. No power, no roads. No water, no grease.
This is how it all looked. 1,000 acres of virgin land.
We have created this amazing vineyard in the middle of what was it, just a desert.
It's wild to compare it with the 700 acres of planted vineyards we have now and wines being made there. It's just dream come true.
Well, Michael was in Mendoza on vacation. He said, yeah, I'm visiting here. My friend in Buenos Aires told me that I should call you so you could give me some advice of what to do in Mendoza.
Next thing I know, he takes off the next 3 days off of work, shows me all around town.
Michael and I had this instant connection, those things that happen a few times in your life.
Meeting Pablo and seeing Mendoza, seeing the magic of Mendoza, the Andes, tasting the wines, meeting the people, seeing the passion. It was clear to me that Mendoza was going to be a really world-class wine destination.
Mendoza is unexplored. We're just starting. There we have vineyards that are 150 years old, but we're just starting. The structures of the soil, the quality of sunlight, immense capacity of growing great complex wines. You can manage a vineyard and be in synchrony with a vineyard that wants to make a great wine.
At the Vines of Mendoza, we have created the concept of owning your land, having your vineyard, being managed in a professional way that make it possible to create the most amazing wines you can create in Argentina.
group here manages the whole process for you. You can be as involved or uninvolved as you want, but they take care of everything.
I love working with the owners. I love being a part of this dream that they have. It's great to see their reaction when they taste their first wine or harvest their first grapes. It feels meaningful.
Cada vez que nós visitamos e que participamos em cada etapa desse projeto, da colheita, da poda, da degustação, sempre nos encanta.
Every single thing that you do to the vine has a result. All those details makes these vines to grow healthier. The best Malbec in the world, that's for sure.
I think that the possibility of making different wines for each of our clients is fantastic. We work mostly with their senses and we had a very nice relationship. You will see that always we hug each other or we kiss each other. We like kissing in Argentina.
We have more than 120 owners from all over the world. We have 700 acres of planted vineyards and we'll make 250 wines with our owners this year.
This is a good combination of the local expertise, knowledge, and the American excellence in management, in response, customer service.
The Vines Resort and Spa is the last piece of the puzzle. It was part of the original dream that Pablo and I had. Our vision for this is a combination of Argentina's rugged majesty and the vistas and the vineyards with a lot of luxury also. Our restaurant is called Siete Fuegos, Seven Fires, where Francis Malman, who is an absolute culinary genius, makes his creations.
He cooks over seven fires. The smell of the flames, the wood burning, crackling, the beef is on the barbecue, the sharing, the laughter, the connection you're getting with everyone around the table. It's an experience like no other. We come down here to experience the gauchos, walks in the vineyards, the horseback riding in the Andes. It's magical.
The seduction of this country is unbelievable. You cannot be here and look at your grapes and not have to make wine. And then you layer onto that the people here. They do everything with love.
I think that passion has happened for a lot of people. The idea of getting themselves involved in the process and getting dirty and planting grapes and harvesting grapes. For people to spend most of their lives behind a desk, I think that makes a huge difference and it's pretty important to them.
People believe that what we are doing was impossible. Yeah. That's crazy, crazy.
That's including us.
At some point, we started to believe that nada es imposible. Nothing is impossible.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.